right at the beginning, before we partnered with a courier. We were London only, and I was actually going across London on public transport, delivering some days like south to north to east to west. It was crazy.
Hello and welcome to Clicked Off. Every week we'll be hearing from the people making it big in e-commerce. I'm your host, Jason Chappell. Joining me today, I have the founder of Otsu, Lauren O'Donnell. Otsu makes it easy to enjoy a healthy breakfast on the go, delivering freshly prepared overnight oats to your door. Lauren, thank you for joining me.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Jason. Yeah, it's lovely to be here.
Well, look, do you want to start by maybe telling us a little bit about Otsu and a little bit how about you and how it all started?
Yeah, definitely. So as you said, we make it easy to enjoy healthy breakfast on the go, and we deliver freshly prepared overnight oats to your door. And we're also launching into retail this year. So for those who don't know, overnight oats are an amazing breakfast. Might be a bit biased, but you make them by soaking oats in milk or plant-based milk. You can add anything in there. So cinnamon, fruit, seeds, peanut butter, whatever you have in your store cupboard. And those were the breakfasts that I used to prep myself when I used to work in the city. Before launching Otsu, could see colleagues were making overnight oats as well. They'd become super popular on Instagram and TikTok as recipes, but there was still something that you had to make yourself. You had to have all the ingredients and know how to get the right consistency and pack the flavor in. And yeah, it can be time consuming to do every single evening. And on the days that I didn't have time to prep them, I struggled to find any decent alternatives in the stores around my office. So when I did pop into Tesco Express on the way to work, I'd look around and all I could see were sugary pastries, breakfast biscuits, drinks, or I'd go for coffee, which definitely didn't keep me full. And I just thought it would be incredible to pick up a healthy and convenient breakfast like the overnight oats that I was making myself. And at the moment, retailers now are dedicating more space to plant-based products. About 70% of the UK, they've either adopted or they're open to adopting a plant-based diet. So they're kind of looking for more innovation in that space. And they're also really keen to expand their breakfast to go offering. We've seen that from some of the conversations that we're having with supermarkets at the moment. They're not just focusing on the kind of meal deal and lunch products and dinner for tonight products. And so, spotted a gap in the market in the UK. Could also see that brands in the US that focused on overnight oats that started as startups were doing really, really well. So brands like Mush and Oats Overnight, they're stocked in the likes of Walmart, Costco and Target. Generating tens of millions in revenue, but there's still an open space in the UK. So I started making and selling overnight oats online. So Shopify was our first channel.
Thank God for that. Like we were talking before we hit record about the tech that people use for their stores, and I'm so relieved that you said Shopify. Like this is it's something that's very close to my heart. Like it's so much easier to use than so many others. I mean, I'm going to get all the haters now jumping on and saying, what about Magento or what about WooCommerce and all these things? But I think from just a usability perspective, Shopify's got to be the way forward, right?
Yeah, 100%. I was recommended Shopify from a lot of different founders. And I can't say I've used other e-commerce platforms to compare, but the insights on there, I think, are unparalleled. And it was easy to put the online store together myself without support. So yeah, 100% recommend it.
Awesome. Now, am I right in thinking that you found a recipe for overnight oats like on Instagram or something like that? Is that right? And is that kind of what got you going?
Yeah, exactly. So I came across a website, I think it was on Instagram, and just started making my own recipes, tweaking them. As I said, it is a little bit hard to get that consistency right and get it creamy and pack the flavor in. So was just experimenting with loads of different spices and ingredients and then cracked a recipe. And yeah, it all changed then. And I just thought, this is incredible. It was the only thing that kept me full and energized all morning until I had a late lunch. So yeah, it was great, but difficult every single evening to find the time to make fresh overnight oats.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned you worked in the city before. What were you doing before starting Otsu? Because I think we can probably all relate to working in that more corporate world. I haven't come across somebody who has designed their career to be in e-commerce yet. Everybody seems to have just found their way here. And we can, having been in that corporate world, late lunch is something that is real. Like, there's no lunch at 12 o'clock or 1 o'clock. It's that kind of, oh shit, it's 3 o'clock, I should probably have something to eat situation, yeah. Right? So what did you do? What did you do before you started Otsu?
So after university, I joined a graduate scheme in asset management. So I was at Fidelity, did a number of different roles, mainly in digital and the marketing departments in the UK and also in Hong Kong. And yeah, I enjoyed the marketing side and the digital side a lot more than some of the other roles that I did. So I did some investment roles, but enjoyed those the most. They were the most creative and thought they would set me up best for whatever I did in the future. So I wasn't sure if I was going to stay in the finance industry for a very long time. I then moved to HSBC and was a social media manager at HSBC, managing accounts with millions and millions of followers, lots of structure, quite hierarchical, a massive organization and building. I think there are about 10,000 people in the building in Canary Wharf. So when I did move there, with it being such a big corporate, it did feel a little bit less personal an environment. It was during that time that I was thinking about what I wanted to do next. And I did look at roles within startups. I was quite interested in plant-based. I'd adopted a plant-based diet, was feeling amazing. I wanted to do something in that space, but didn't see a role at the time that I wanted to go into and was having thoughts about starting my own business and had this product idea. I was really excited about the concept of overnight oats. And so I thought, let me give this a go for maybe a year, see how it goes. I can always go back to corporate if I want to. And yeah, just started literally from the ground up in my kitchen, making overnight oats, as I said, selling them on Shopify, and then also at markets around London, independent coffee shops, and just like building up slowly. And
so was that how it came about? Like, you're in your kitchen, you had to have your kitchen certified, didn't you?
Yes, yeah, I did.
So how did that work?
Yeah, so the environmental health officer from your local council would just come over. Ours took place just before lockdown, literally like a few days before. They came to check everything out, basically.
So this is just your standard kitchen, the kitchen you're using every single day for making your meals.
Yeah. It's crazy that you can get it kind of checked and get going from there, but it is fairly straightforward. You just got to get your food hygiene rating and talk through kind of your process. And yeah, they'll give you advice on it and give you a rating.
Okay. And then after that, it was just a case of pounding the streets and knocking on doors, trying to get your product in front of people.
Yeah. So after we spent some time building the Shopify store, got that going. Initially, it was friends and family and people that I knew who were ordering, and then eventually progressed to people that I didn't know and kind of nationwide customers. At the same time, I was going to local coffee shops around London, talking about what I was doing, seeing if they were interested. Some of them, yeah, were really nice and let me kind of list our products in their stores, and then signing up for markets. So taking part in as many as I could and just doing everything that I could, attending events. Most of them were virtual at the time because it was around the time of lockdown and the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So attending virtual events, connecting with other founders. I didn't come from a food industry background, so was trying to learn as much as I could about getting into just getting going in the food industry, but then also getting into retail. That was something that I knew I wanted to do. So learning more about that, learning about how you find a manufacturer, because I knew that this wasn't necessarily going to be a long-term solution. And that is probably the biggest challenge that we've had over the last couple of years, is finding a manufacturer that we can work with.
Let's jump into that, because I think that's a difficult transition period for everybody with their product, you know, especially if it's something that they're making or having manufactured. How do you go about letting go of your baby that you have been putting together in your kitchen and giving that to somebody so that they can manufacture it? What sort of volumes are you talking about before that became a viable solution for you as well?
Yeah, so every manufacturer is different in terms of the minimum order quantity or MOQ that they'll set. And a common challenge that startups will face is that a lot of manufacturers will want to set quite a high MOQ to make it worthwhile for them. At the same time, you're perhaps struggling to find stockists that are going to take that kind of quantity from you. And so that was the biggest challenge, was finding someone who had a low enough MOQ, but also had the expertise and experience in a product like ours. So we have a chilled supply chain. It's a shorter shelf life product, perhaps more challenging than an ambient product, so a long shelf life product. And I would say it has been a long journey, and we've worked together for a very long time doing trials, iterations, recipe development, like many, many samples, going back and forth, feeding back, making alterations to the recipe. So I'm now very comfortable and happy. And I'm just really pleased that we've now outsourced to a manufacturer who we're really confident with. And he's made our products, absolutely delicious, like using a very, very similar recipe, and it tastes, even better than before. So I'm really pleased, but can definitely take a long time to find someone. So I would recommend start that research process early, speak to other founders who are in a similar but non-competing area to you, who might be willing to share. If their manufacturer has capacity, looking on Celsa or BRC directories for manufacturers in the UK, and just contacting them. It can take many, many months to kind of get those conversations going.
Okay, and is that how you found your manufacturer? I've spoken to a few people who, some of them they've resorted to Google, and just tried to find somebody, just cold Googling, and then being able to try and broker a deal. How did you find yours?
Yeah, so I took that approach as well. We actually found our manufacturer. It was through a contact that I met at Bread and Jam, who was another food and drink startup. And it was their manufacturer who they had capacity and were, interested in speaking with us. And he actually became a customer of ours. And at the time, I was delivering orders myself around London, right at the beginning, before we partnered with a courier. We were London only, and I was actually going across London on public transport, delivering some days like south to north to east to west. It was crazy. We'd catch up with him. He'd order quite frequently, so we'd catch up. He was a food startup founder, and so he kindly shared the details of his manufacturer, and that's how we got to know each other. But at the same time, I was looking online and at those directories that I mentioned. So I would recommend people look for manufacturers who are in a similar space. So for us, we would specifically look for manufacturers who had experience in chilled or in shorter shelf life products, because they'll likely have the machinery that you'll need and the storage facilities that you'll need.
Okay, awesome. Now, you mentioned it right at the beginning, about going into retail this mm-hmm. year. You have recently signed, is it two retailers you're going into?
Yes.
But you are stocked elsewhere, aren't you? Tell me a little bit about that journey, because I guess that's been part of that process of helping you transition into outsourcing your manufacturing and have somebody else do that for you now that your volumes are increasing.
Yeah. So like since day one, I've been trying to understand how to get into retail, because that's where the volume is at. And through that, you can also achieve like lower manufacturing costs, and it makes everything like worthwhile for all parties. So I'm really excited to share that we are launching into 645 Holland & Barrett stores in September, and then into co-op stores nationwide in January. So we're one of eight brands chosen to be part of Co-op's apiary scheme, which is an incubator they run for mission-driven food and drink brands. So those are our first two nationwide listings, and we're in conversations with other retailers at the moment. Really, really excited about those. I met them through, so Bread and Jam, the conference that I mentioned, we were lucky enough to be chosen to pitch to six retailers last year and six retailers this year. And it's a fantastic way to get that rare face-to-face time with the buyers. So I definitely recommend any early stage food and drink brands to attend and apply to pitch to them. And then we were approached on LinkedIn actually by our first buyer in Jiffy Grocery. So that was our first experience in retail. It was with a rapid grocery company that operated in London called Jiffy Grocery. And we, I think he'd seen some of the posts that we'd shared about our achievements, and he was keen to expand Jiffy's fresh breakfast offering. We had quite aligned audiences of young, like urban, of Gen Z, millennial customers. And it went really well with them. So we became their top selling breakfast ahead of some of the biggest brands like Kellogg's and Weetabix, which is an amazing case study to share
with
the other retailers.
Incredible. That is absolutely incredible, outselling those people who have been in that market for so long and have such brand power
yeah.
and budget behind them that you're outselling them. That's amazing.
I know. It was their marketing budgets are millions and millions. So really, really pleased.
You mentioned being part of an incubator.
Yeah.
And that opening some doors for you. Now, that's not the only one you've been part of. You've been part of quite a few, and you've had opportunities through the brand, and you're obviously opening a lot of doors and working really hard behind the scenes to try and drive this. But I'm looking through the list of things that you have been a part of, incubators and accelerators and things like that. This is a long list. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so I think that accelerator programs are an amazing way to connect with other founders that are a similar stage to you and receive expert mentoring from people in so many different areas in quite a consolidated time frame. And it's especially important if you're a solo founder or in a small team, perhaps not from a food industry or whatever industry you're in background. And it's just a way to accelerate your learning. So I was keen to put myself forward for different programs, and I've participated in 3 business accelerators. So 2 have just come to an end over the last couple of weeks. So 1 is called Unrest, and that's for mission-driven consumer brands. I know that their applications are open at the moment and they're closing soon, but that was a fantastic program. I think it was about 12 or 14 startups, all with amazing products or platforms, all kind of focused on sustainability and making the world a better place in some way. It finished with an amazing demo day, so like a pitch day at the Barbican Centre to investors. It's probably the biggest pitch that I've done. I really, really enjoyed that recently. And then LSE, my university, they do an amazing program for university students and alumni, and that's just come to an end as well, and also finished with a great demo day. And then NatWest Accelerator, I took part in like the 6 months before these two, so about a year ago that kicked off, and that was also great. So one-to-one support, kind of goal setting sessions, expert sessions. Unrest had really great pitch practice, so there was like mandatory pitch practice sessions every single week, and they'd invite investors to come down and give feedback direct to you, which was so helpful and invaluable. And you actually get the chance to meet these kind of elusive investors, and like really helped everyone, because most people on the program were fundraising at the time. So I couldn't recommend them enough. And the last point I want to add is I was able to meet our advisor called Paul, who has over 30 years experience as a senior buyer in Sainsbury's, Waitrose and Costa. And he's been so helpful in kind of the retail conversations that I've been having, working through challenges with our manufacturer, and so I met him through NatWest Accelerator, and so you never know kind of who you'll meet through these programs, so I definitely recommend taking part.
No, that is very cool. And do you know what, some of the best connections that I've found have come from really unexpected places. I just turned up at events and come away thinking, oh, maybe there wasn't anything there for me because there wasn't in a potential client or something like that. But actually, then off the back of it, I've made connections with other people who have either referred, clients, or just been able to join people up who can help each other out, and point each other in the right direction. So you never know who you're going to meet. You never know who you're going to meet.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Now, you're raising money right now, aren't you? You have an investment round that you are opening, and you're also doing some crowdfunding, is that right?
Yes, that's right. So we are raising our first round of investment, and it's an EIS eligible pre-seed round, and we are about to go live with a crowdfunding campaign with Seeders. So through that you can invest as little as £10 and own a slice of Otsu as we grow. We've got our coming soon page going live, and I'm really excited about it. It's the first time that I'm taking part in crowdfunding. I've seen a lot about it online, and I followed a lot of other food and drink founders campaigns on platforms like Seeders, on Crowdcube, seen it on LinkedIn, And I thought that with us being like a consumer product, being like pretty easy to understand, like visual, vibrant packaging, and with our kind of founder story that I actively share on LinkedIn and Instagram, I just thought, why not tell that story on a platform like Cedars and invite our customers to be involved, our community, and yeah, open it out and democratize the investment process. So yeah, I'm really, really excited about that.
I recently learned about this EIS eligible investment. It's incredible, absolutely incredible. The kind of risk that it mitigates for investors is amazing, you know, offsetting it against tax, the government yeah. then saying that they'll cover, you know, a proportion of that investment. Investors' exposure is really quite small.
Yeah, it's really, really small. So under SEIS, which startups can take advantage of in their first 3 years of trading, investors will receive 50% income tax relief on any investments made. And with EIS, they'll receive 30% relief.
So how did you go about finding investment or just in starting your investment journey, Lauren?
Yeah. So I was learning a lot about that through attending events and hearing from other founders who had raised investment. And I was always quite in awe thinking, oh my God, that sounds amazing. You know, you see these founders on LinkedIn sharing that they've closed their round of like however much. And I thought, wow, that's incredible. How do you go about this? Because it seems like such a opaque world. I didn't know how they went about it. So I was just going to events, speaking with all the founders who had done so, learning about the difference between raising from angel investors and VCs, so venture capital, trying to understand where we fit in that. So it's our first round and our first raise. And we raise through angels. So VC might be something that we look at in the future, much more kind of, yeah, higher growth expectations if you're working with VCs than angels. So I'd probably say you want to focus more on raising from angels earlier on in your journey. And we did also raise, it's worth me mentioning that we did before our raise, we signed up to the government's bounce back loan, which was a great offer that they put out during the pandemic with a very good interest rate for early stage businesses during that time. So that kind of helped us to get going. Where
did you invest that money? How did you use that at that stage? You know, being quite early stage, how did you use the money from that bounce back loan?
Yeah, so initially we were just bootstrapping, so using the revenue that we generated from our online sales, the profit that we had, and reinvesting that back, kind of using that to get going. But as we grew, one of the first major costs was working with our manufacturer on the NPD, so the new product development, and that kind of recipe iteration process. So that was an investment. We needed funds for that. Packaging. So buying like larger volumes of packaging, that, yeah, cost for that increased over time. Taking part in promotional activities, so activations like we've been part of Ray the Store, which is a fantastic and innovative pop-up for food and drink brands in different parts of London, but there is a fee to be involved there. Taking advantage of different opportunities that I was keen to be part of, eventually like bootstrapping became a little bit difficult if those were the only funds that we had. So I thought, okay, go for the bounce back loan, really great terms. And then I thought with our launches into retail, I could see that we were getting interest from retailers. I could see that there was opportunity for us to be like listed in like bigger supermarkets. There are expectations around marketing spend, and I wanted to make sure that we had the funds to achieve that. I knew that growing the team was also something that I was going to be prioritizing very soon. So needed budget for that, and decided, okay, with this like really positive news and the interest that we have from retailers, I think it's time that we go out to market. If anything, I may have even gone earlier. I think I was holding off for a little bit as I learned more about it. But I've seen founders even from day one or even pre-launch, they're going out and raising their pre-seed round under SEIS and yeah, doing well. So yeah, it's a difficult one to decide when to start, but I wouldn't let any like doubts hold you back, I think, because I didn't know a lot about it. And also I was a little bit worried at the time. I'd seen all these amazing crowdfunding campaigns. I knew I maybe wanted to do that in the future. But I think perhaps like my confidence and being able to put myself out there, speak about the fact that I was raising, I didn't necessarily feel confident and knowledgeable about that right early on. And so I went out kind of when I felt ready to do that. And I took part in another virtual accelerator that was specifically focused on helping female founders to raise called Hotbed. And they invited investors to virtual sessions with us, like Q&A sessions every week, learned more about angel investing and VCs through that, and started to build a pitch deck. That was probably one of the first things that I knew that I needed. Spoke with different founders that I knew, looked at different pitch decks that I could get access to, started putting that together. And then I say the second thing that you need to have when you're speaking with an investor is a view on what your valuation is going to be. So that was another point that I reached out to founders that I knew who had raised. I also looked at rounds that had been raised through Seeders and Crowdcube to see what valuations food and beverage businesses at a similar stage to me were raising at. Also spoke with potential investors and I said, this is what we're thinking. Do you have any thoughts on this? Or do you think it's kind of a bit high or low? Or yeah, I just wanted to get feedback on it before I went out to market.
Were people generally helpful in that regard? You know, they would tell you if your valuation was way out or if you were close, you know, they thought that seemed sensible. They were pretty open about that.
Yeah, so they were. I used the weekly sessions during the accelerator with investors because they weren't necessarily investors who were assessing my opportunity for investment. They were just there to be completely candid and honest. And so I would share about what we were doing and ask about their view on evaluation on those calls. And I think once you start to speak to enough people and also other founders getting their view, I think they'll be very honest with you if they think you're being like a bit kind of ridiculous and it's out of the expected range, they'll tell you like you might find that challenging. I just circulate it and you start to get a feel for if you're kind of weighing off or in the right range. It also depends on the kind of feeling and how the market's doing. At the moment, valuations are more challenged and they're lower than they were like a couple of years ago. So it's important to bear that in mind as well. And then when it comes to actually having conversations with investors, they will have opinions. They might have their reasons for wanting it to come down because everything is a negotiation. So just be prepared for being able to justify and explain like how you calculated your valuation. So is it a multiplier on your 2023 or whatever year it is revenue, or is it based on comparing with comparable startups in your industry at a similar stage? Just like be able to back that up.
Nice. And I'm hoping they're not as aggressive as they are on Dragon's Den, you know, with people coming in and saying, oh, I'll give you 5%, you know, for your investment, and the Dragon's Den around say, oh, that's fine, but we want 50.
Yeah.
They're not as harsh as that.
Yeah, the valuations on that show or the ones that they try and negotiate are quite unique. So yeah, no, he's definitely not as bad as that. I would also say that speaking to other founders, I've said it already so many times, but any founders that you know who have very recently closed a round that you may know, or if you don't know anyone who has done that, just ask other people in your network. And even if you're speaking with any investors, if you can ask them, are there any founders that you know or that you support that have recently closed around? I found that super helpful, speaking to them, because they've recently gone through what you're going through. They might have contacts to share. We also shared a video on LinkedIn about the fact that we were raising. So quite a public way to talk about that you're raising. We put it in our in my personal bio on LinkedIn and put it in the kind of headline, which I'd seen some startups do. And we have continued to get inbound messages and DMs from investors, either from seeing that we're raising through the bio, which is incredible.
Just organically, they've seen it and they reach out. That's amazing.
Yeah, ideal. And also the video generated a lot of interest, so had a number of conversations off the back of the video because people in my network were liking it, and then people that they knew were seeing it and getting in touch. So I wouldn't hesitate to talk about it on LinkedIn. I know some people take the approach of they prefer to do it behind the scenes, but it was definitely a positive thing for us.
Now, you are a pretty decorated entrepreneur. You have received all sorts of awards. I'm going to read these out because you have Adobe Small Business Goes Big Award win, Management Today's 35 Women Under 35, LSE Entrepreneur of the Year 2023. You've been shortlisted for Founder of the Year in the Hustle Awards 2023 and also Female Startup of the Year finalist in 2021. There are not many people that have these accolades to their name. How did you go about getting all of these and getting this recognition?
Yeah, thank you.
There was that really like embarrassed giggle then of like, oh yeah, don't be embarrassed.
No. They're like, yeah, it's crazy when I see them listed because they've come about over the space of the last 3 years. And so I would say to anyone, just look out for opportunities. A lot of these I put myself forward for. So just if you see an opportunity that someone has shared on LinkedIn or anywhere else, just put yourself forward. You never know. You never know what's going to come of it. Yeah, they've all come about in different ways. LSE, there have been a lot of opportunities through my university. So taking part in their accelerator program that I mentioned. And then they do a biannual award. And then I was fortunate enough to win their Entrepreneur of the Year award, which took place kind of after that competition. And then, yeah, again, the Hustle Awards came about quite recently. I saw that, jumped on it, just did a short application. And yeah, I would just say, keep your eyes open, follow organizations that put these competitions out. So like Hustle Awards, which is run by Startup Magazine, Female Startup of the Year, that was run by Enterprise Nation. If your university has any activity, Adobe's competition, The Small Business Goes Big, that also was in partnership with Enterprise Nation. So I would just say keep your eyes out and put yourself forward for anything that you see. You never know what's going to come of it.
Well, you kind of never miss a PR opportunity. And I think that's probably something that we should touch on because you get a reasonable amount of coverage, from PR. And I know it's a question lots of founders and entrepreneurs, and do you know what, even more established businesses have questions around. How do you go about dealing with PR?
Yeah, so PR, again, it's been keeping my eye out for PR opportunities. It's something that I was quite focused on in the early days because I really wanted to kind of build up a little bit of coverage and be able to mention that on our online store. I think PR is really important because it gives credibility, especially if you're an early stage startup. It gives you something to talk about on your LinkedIn. It's a great achievement. The trust kind of behind these bigger brands and newspapers, if you can be associated with that, that's only a positive thing. So we have been featured in newspapers like The Sun, Guardian, Metro, Daily Mail. And I saw those opportunities on groups like Lightbulb, which is a Facebook group where journalists put requests out for specific people that they want to speak to. So that might be a female entrepreneur. The Sun was a feature for International Women's Day. Heart FM, they also put out a shout out for female entrepreneurs for International Women's Day as well that were focused on sustainability. I also joined a community called the PR Set, and they also share journalist requests. You can go online and look for journal requests by searching for the hashtag journal request and kind of be reactive to those opportunities. You can also be proactive and reach out to journalists that you might see in some of the publications that are aligned with your product that you want to be listed into. And you can kind of, yeah, go out with an email or a press release that you want to share with them or offer to share samples of your product for them to try and give those to them. Another great opportunity we were involved in was through Meta's small business campaign. So Meta were looking for entrepreneurs to feature in this campaign that were kind of artisan business owners. I joined their Facebook group called Meta Boost Leaders Network that you can apply to join for free. And through that group, they kind of look for entrepreneurs that they want to support. And we were featured on billboards across the UK. And in a really, really fun commercial that we shot with dancers and actors that was branded as Otsu, and they were dressed up in pajamas and in suits. And they called them sleepy heads and heads of department. And then everyone was eating our overnight oats. And it was, yeah, an incredible experience. The first set that I'd ever been on with lots of people there. So that was incredible. And that was shown to millions of business owners across the UK and Germany as part of the campaign. And Stephen Bartlett was involved in the campaign as well. So BBC Dragon Stephen Bartlett.
And Stephen Bartlett is involved in everything. I don't know how that man, I mean, I don't know how he has the time. I mean, I don't know how you have the time, Lauren, in all honesty. How are you managing all of these things? Do you have a team that helps you? Obviously, in the beginning, you didn't. But, you know, is there a team around you that supports you with some of this stuff now?
Yeah, so the team and hiring was something that I did want to touch on because it's something that I'm working through right now. We have hired members of the team in the past. So we took advantage of the government's Kickstart scheme during the pandemic and brought on more junior team members that were early in their career, and they were helping with our digital marketing and social media for 6-month placements. And that was great, but that did come to an end. And we are now hiring within marketing and in operations now that we're raising our first round of investment, because I'm definitely needing more support. At the moment, it is just myself, and we work with some freelancers on things like design. But yeah, mainly it's me trying to balance everything. And as we're launching into retailers, there is a lot more operations and admin work that's needed to manage the logistics, manufacturing, things like that. So it is super busy, and I am keen to kind of protect some personal time, not work on weekends. But at the moment, that is up and down. Like, if I've got to hop on something or prepare for something and I know I won't have time during the week, then I might have to do a little bit of work on the weekend. But keen for that not to become norm. So yeah, actively hiring at the moment.
Okay, cool. How do you then manage, Lauren? How do you cope? How do you cope with the stress of running your own business and, you know, all of the anxiety that comes with it? How do you keep level?
Yeah, so it's a constant work in progress, if I'm completely honest.
I think we all feel that.
Work in progress, like, there are days when it is like really, really full on, but I try. I love to exercise, so I try and fit in at least like one or two workouts a week. At the moment, that's tending to happen towards the weekend if the weekdays are particularly busy. I love to spend time in nature, so I try my best to go for at least one walk on the weekend, nice and green area. I live in Mill Hill in Northwest London, which is nice and green. So yeah, it's fairly easy to do. And then I think leaning on those around me when I need to. So being a solo founder and not having a co-founder to bounce challenges off of, and not yet a large team in place to kind of work through these things through, just leaning on kind of friends, family, my relationship, kind of talking through issues. And not just kind of ruminating about everything completely myself, because I think I'd go mad if I was doing that constantly.
Yeah, I feel you on that one. I think if my other half wasn't around, yeah, I don't know where I'd be or what I'd be doing. I'd be sitting in a dark corner somewhere, rocking backwards and forwards, probably. Just having that person to share with makes such a big
difference. Yeah, it does 100%. At the end of the day, you definitely need someone to talk to.
So, Lauren, what's next for you? You've got some new product in development, or it's been developed that you're launching. Is that right?
Yeah. So we are developing and going to launch the UK's first Just Add Milk overnight oat mixes, which are like a longer shelf life, ambient, convenient version of our ready to eat range. So they allow you to prep perfect overnight oats anytime, anywhere, whether you're at home, at the office, or on the go, just by adding milk. And we aim to become the first overnight oat branded product in the cereal aisles. At the moment, there's a lot of porridge mixes, birch and mueslis, but nothing that's kind of going after that overnight oat. After overnight oats at all, despite the popularity of the breakfast. So it's going to have every single thing that you need in there. Oats, seeds, fruit. You just add milk and you can then pop it in the fridge and then prep your own overnight oats. So yeah, really excited about that. It has been an interesting one to manage because I'm really excited about bringing it out, but as I'm still like a one person team for the most part, it's been quite challenging knowing, you know, like, should I dedicate a lot of time to this new product development when we've got a lot to work through on our kind of hero product, which is our ready to eat overnight oats. And so over the next few months, I'm going to be splitting my time between the two, though looking to, as I mentioned, hire within operations and get support from an NPD professional that can help with it. But we're going to be working with a manufacturer on these products, developing them, testing them, going through that whole process all over again. So it's going to be like a brand new challenge over the next few months to be like balancing two completely different manufacturing processes, supply chains, one being chilled, one being ambient, and marketing them in a different way as well. So, but I'm excited. It's going to be something new after a few years focusing on the chilled overnight oats.
I think it's super exciting. And any new challenge is exciting. You know, I think it brings with it new skills that you need to learn or lean on, you know, and if it's going to grow the brand and get exposure, I mean, in the cereal aisle is going to be massive. You know, if you can get in there, then that's going to be incredible.
Yeah, it's a huge opportunity. Also looking at different formats, so like multi-serve cereal boxes, and then also individual single-serve pots, which I think will be perfect for coffee shops or on the go. So yeah, I'm really excited to see what everyone thinks of them.
That'd be very, very cool. Awesome. Well, look, Lauren, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on, and thank you so much. I think there's so many nuggets in there for people to be able to take away and hopefully start to use, you know, in their brands. And it's been really, really good fun. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, it's been amazing to chat. I hope it has been helpful, and yeah, really happy to speak, help anyone that might have any follow-up questions. Feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm Lauren O'Donnell on there, and my email is lauren@oatsu.co.uk. We also have created a special discount code for anyone listening as well. So if anyone does want to sort their breakfast for the week ahead and try our overnight oats, then you can do so from oatsu.co.uk, and you can use the code clickedoff15 for 15% off.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Lauren.
Yeah, thank you. It's been amazing to chat. Have a great day.